Hello, and welcome to Delivering Miracles, a podcast to give moms like you strategies and tips to have a safer pregnancy so you can bring home a healthy baby. I'm your host and your high-risk pregnancy expert, Parijat Deshpande. Hey, everybody, welcome back. Today, I want to talk about what happens after your baby comes home. You know, throughout my whole pregnancy and the time that my son was in the NICU, I just had one thought, which is I just want to bring him home. I just want him to be home. Everything is going to get better when he gets home. And everyone's goal around me was to help him come home too. Obviously, nobody wanted him in the hospital. But there's a huge part of that conversation that wasn't happening, which is what happens when he comes home? What's that experience like? What can I expect? I can expect happiness and excitement and joy and relief, but there's so much more to that that nobody's talking about. Whether it's because we don't want to talk about it, or it's because we just want to believe that this awful experience is finally going to be over because they're home, or we just don't want to accept that it continues and the difficulties continue once the baby comes home. There's a lot of reasons for why we don't talk about it, I think. But what I've seen time and time again in my practice, working with women who've had high-risk pregnancies and brought their babies home, is that by not talking about what happens after baby comes home, way too many women are left feeling so shocked and so confused and extremely alone postpartum than they ever realized would happen. The reality is approximately 600,000 women struggle with postpartum depression every year. About 9% of women, which is about 360,000 women, suffer from postpartum PTSD. And a little less than 700,000 women experience postpartum anxiety every year in the United States. And all of that is exacerbated and makes it more likely to be possible after you've gone through a high-risk pregnancy. Now, I'll be honest, in the fight to bring my son home, I never thought about the postpartum experience. What would life look like when we brought him home, or what that would be like? And I wish someone had spelled it out for me, which is why I'm here to tell you today that it's not over because it's over. What I mean by that is your experience, the ups and downs, it's not over just because your pregnancy's over and your baby's home. The anxiety, the worries, the stress, they're not going to just disappear just because your baby is in your arms in your house. You have to work through the trauma you've been through to make room for the happy life you fought so hard for. And it is possible. Now, you might be thinking, well, maybe this happens to women who've had mental health issues in the past, and that doesn't happen to me. Like, I've been fine. I don't have depression. I've never felt anxious. But it's not. All the research shows that postpartum mood and anxiety disorders can happen to anyone, and that your risk is significantly increased if you go through a high-risk pregnancy, which is a traumatic experience. So it's not over because it's over. You have to do the work to process your high-risk pregnancy experience and the trauma of it all so you can truly heal and make room for that happiness that you fought so hard for. I had the pleasure of working with a really lovely international client. I'm going to call her Amy. And as always, I've changed a bunch of the details around to protect her privacy. But I want to tell you a little bit about her. She was really stressed out during her pregnancy. She had a really high-powered position in her company, and career was just always really important to her. It was something that drove her, it was a passion of hers, and it made her really happy. So her plan was, once she got pregnant, she was going to slow down about a week or so before her due date and take a few months off for maternity leave. But she admitted that she was planning on still taking a few calls even then from home, and then she was going to go back to work full time. That was her plan. She had it all mapped out. She felt really good about it, and she thought it was entirely possible, and it sounded very reasonable. But at the beginning of the third trimester, her blood pressure started inching up slowly. And her doctor told her, you know, it's probably best if you start to slow down. So she cut back on her travel. She kind of kept it more local, not so much of the long distance traveling. And she slowed down the best that she could while still keeping up with her job and what she needed to do for her responsibilities at work. But she was freaked out. This was the first time something so huge had completely gone out of her control. And all of a sudden, she said she got this tunnel vision. And all she could think about was her baby and what would happen if something went wrong for the baby. I don't know if you've seen that movie, The Proposal with Sandra Bullock. It's that movie where she's this editor, I think, at a publishing company or something. And she was this like really high powered executive, and she's got these really great suits on, and she's got this big corner office. Did you see that movie? I think I saw it on a plane once or something. Wait, it has Ryan Reynolds. I don't know if that's a better hook for you than Sandra Bullock. But she's super put together. She's super on top of her game. She's got everything just like nailed down one by one. That's what Amy was like. And so all of a sudden, she went from this woman who everybody looked up to, who's got it all figured out, who's always really well put together, to someone who was constantly making mistakes at work, somebody who couldn't sleep. She was scared all the time, and she just didn't know how to cope with the fact that this was all out of her control. But she kept telling herself that if she can will her way to term, and she delivers a term, everything will be fine, and it's all going to go behind her, and it's all going to be okay, and she can resume life the way that she had known it and the way that she'd planned it to be once the baby was born. She delivered her baby at 36 weeks, just couple days after 36 weeks. And thankfully, the baby didn't need any time in the NICU for being born that early. And they went home. And thus began her life that she had dreamt of. She was relieved, and she was just, oh my God, thank God my pregnancy is over. That was awful. But she called me when her daughter was 4 months old because she said something's not right. She told me that the other day she was rocking her baby in the evening to put her down to sleep. The room was dark. She had just finished feeding her. And she put her hand on her daughter's face and she felt it wet. She thought, usually my daughter makes a sound when she's crying. What's going on? She turned on the little light by the rocking chair and she saw that her baby was fast asleep and she wasn't crying. And it took her a second to realize that it wasn't her daughter who was crying, it was her. And she started paying attention to those feelings and started thinking back to how often was this happening. And she realized that she cried a lot, but she didn't realize she was crying every time she was holding her baby. She said that she was still waking up in the middle of the night, not because her baby was crying, but also in between those feedings because she was having nightmares. And those nightmares were always about something happening to her daughter. And she called me because she was confused. Why is this happening still? My daughter is 4 months old. She's healthy. She's happy. She's growing well. This is supposed to be over. What's happening? What she needed was someone to tell her that it's not over. Just because her pregnancy's over. Just because her baby's home and she's growing and thriving. We worked together for several months, and because she is such an intellectual woman, you know, somebody who spent a lot of time in her head and was very analytical, we spent a lot of our time doing work on helping her reconnect with her body and helping her wrap her head around what she had been through emotionally and physically. I spent a lot of time teaching her the tools on how to have compassion for herself. because she had just been through a trauma during her high-risk pregnancy and her preterm delivery. Yes, it was 36 weeks, but it was earlier than she had wanted. And it was after weeks and weeks of worry and stress and anxiety about what's going to happen to her baby. After our work together, Amy did great. I was so excited to see the change in her as she really embraced this idea that she had to have compassion for herself. She had to really step back and say, hey, God, I've been through a lot. And that makes sense that I'm not over it still. So she started sleeping better. Her nightmares went away. And she said she felt like she could think again, which I know was really important to her. But that anxiety had clouded her ability to really think. And it all happened because she gave herself permission to heal by showing herself compassion and telling herself it was okay that it wasn't over yet because what she had been through was so hard. It's really not over because it's over. We like to believe that bringing our baby home will take care of the anxieties and the worries, but it just doesn't work that way. You have to work through your high-risk pregnancy experience and the trauma of it so you can truly heal and make room for all that happiness that's about to come your way. For all you preemie moms that are... For all you preemie moms, this gets even more complicated because the NICU adds a layer of trauma on top of the trauma that you faced during your high-risk pregnancy if you had one before your preterm birth. When I delivered, it took less than 12 minutes from contraction to delivery. They told me that it was going to be fast when we talked about the birth experience and what to expect. And I hadn't even thought about whether I wanted an epidural or not. So it was just something that I asked about. And they all said, you're not going to have time for one. It's when it happens, it's going to be fast because you don't have to be fully dilated to deliver a 1 pound baby. And they weren't kidding. It took 12 minutes. It was complete chaos during the time of delivery. I honestly have no idea how many people were in the room. It felt like there were about 50. I don't know, though. I know that there was a delivery nurse who is now a wonderful friend of mine. There was the delivering OB, who, if you listen to my first podcast, was actually the same OB that admitted me to the hospital. So it kind of came full circle. And there was my mom, because my husband couldn't come fast enough because it all happened too quickly. I remember there being lights. I remember there being lots of sound. And I remember once it was over, I was devastated. Because the pregnancy that I'd fought so hard to keep had ended 15 and a half weeks early. And I was devastated because I couldn't protect him anymore. And we had no idea if he would survive. We found out a year later when we went back to L&D and to the NICU to visit all of the staff around his birthday, his 1 year birthday. We found out then from one of the nurses that happened to be in the room that because he had come so fast, they weren't ready for him in the NICU. And so the neonatologist actually had to wrap him up and run him, holding him like a football, into the NICU unit to get him settled and to do everything they needed to do, including resuscitating him. They couldn't do it in the room, which is what they'd prepared us for when we had our neo consults all for those few days while I was in the hospital. And we thought, oh my God, of course. Of course he's going to have the most dramatic entrance. And if you know him, it just is very fitting. He might be a future soap opera star, I think, the way that he is. But it just capped the story that, okay, we had more drama after he was born, which is the neo just had to hold him under her arm, and she just booked it to the NICU. But the reality was that it wasn't simple. You know, it's funny now to think about it years later about how she had to run him, but it was scary. It was so scary because she had to resuscitate him. And we'd been talking for the 2 weeks that I had been in the hospital. Every day or every other day, a neonatologist or a nurse would come in and ask, if he's born today, do you want to resuscitate him or not? And we had to decide that. And for us, the answer was yes. That answer is not always yes for every family. And it's a very personal decision. But for us, it was yes. And so that, even just having to have that conversation, adds a layer of trauma. How do you talk about and decide whether you want to resuscitate your child? Oh my God. When you're in the moment, you do what you have to do. You get clear on your values. You talk to the people that matter. You get the information and you make a decision. But you don't realize the impact that a conversation like that has on you until it's well over months down the road. At 3 weeks old, I had a chance to hold him. It was only the second or third time that I'd held him because he was born very sick. But I loved it. He was tiny, 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 about a pound and a half, maybe a little more. And he had all these tubes and wires around him. But I loved it. And I soaked it up and he soaked it up. And we were just, it was so happy. Such, those moments in the NICU were just so wonderful to be reunited with him. And I was sitting there, it was night, I could see through the huge windows in the unit that it was dark outside, and it was cold. It was winter, so it was cold, so he had a little beanie on. You won't believe how tiny these beanies are for babies like him. They're like the size of a Kit Kat or something. They're so small. So he had this cute little beanie on his head, and I was holding him, he's wrapped in blankets, and then I saw on the monitor that he was connected to, a number started dipping quickly, 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 and eventually the alarm started going. Now in the NICU, if you've had a baby in the NICU, you know it's very loud in there. The alarms are always going off. But this one caught my attention and I saw the numbers dipping and dipping and dipping. He stopped breathing and his oxygen levels were just plummeting. And I looked down at him. And he wasn't blue, which is what I thought the color was that you turn when you stop breathing. But when you stop breathing for that long and your oxygen levels drop that low, you turn gray. And he was gray. I was terrified because I thought this was it. I thought we had fought so hard through the pregnancy and over the last 3 weeks to help him have the best chance possible to survive. And I thought this was it. I thought we were going to say goodbye to him that day. I remember the nurses and the doctor rushed to his bedside. And they had this sense of calm around them. They were very calm. And he had the most experienced nurses watching over him while he was in such critical condition. So they had decades of experience doing this. And I could see that their body was calm, their voice was calm, but their eyes gave them away. They were scared. This was serious. I remember the neonatologist very gently said to me, "Why don't we put him back in his bed right now?" And I didn't want to let him go because I didn't want that to be the last moment that I held him. But I knew that that's what he needed. And so we put him back in his bed. Three people helped me move him back because he had so many tubes and wires. And my husband and I stood by while they all worked on him, trying to figure out how to get him to breathe. And we held on to each other so tightly. I don't think even we were breathing that well. In the middle of that night, the doctor called us and told us that he was doing okay. They'd figured out what was wrong, And they got him breathing again, thankfully. He was on some new medication, and we were going to just take it day by day. But I wouldn't be able to hold him for a little while. And I was okay with that. If it meant that he was breathing, I was okay with that. And that's when I told my husband, it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I told him, it is your responsibility that if he survives this and we come home, you have to make sure this child never says no to a hug, ever, ever, because he owes me months and months and years of hugs and kisses. And he thankfully agreed. And thankfully, we have a very loving boy who likes hugs. Over time, he did get better. It was a long road, and that's, I'll tell you the details about that someday. But he did get better, and we took him home the day after his due date. But that stress never went away, because post-NICU care was so complicated. Now, I'll be really honest here. We had it easy compared to most families who have a baby born as early as he did. He didn't come home on monitors. He didn't come home on oxygen. But he did have 3 medical appointments a week on top of all the typical newborn care and the lack of sleep that you have. Plus, you add on the compounded effect of all the stress that we had been through with fertility treatment and then the high-risk pregnancy and then months in the NICU. I was exhausted. I'd stopped working when I was on bed rest. So I just never went back because I needed to be full-time at home to be able to keep up with all of his cares and his medication and his physical therapy and his exercises and all of that. But the stress was taking a toll. I was snapping at people. I was angry. I was really easily frustrated. And it was just like on edge all the time. I needed things to go smoothly. And if anything didn't go smoothly, I would lose it. As a therapist, I knew I had to do the work. I had to. There was no way that this was just going to disappear on its own. And we were in it for the long haul. And we've already been on 2 marathons at this point, one with the pregnancy, once with the NICU. This was just another marathon. It just happened to be back to back with the other 2. And so I knew I needed to make an effort to work through this. So I reached out to a couple of therapists that I had found who were willing to do virtual therapy because I needed the sessions to fit in with my life, which was so busy dealing with a newborn and pumping and all his medications and his appointments and stuff. I needed to make sure that it fit. I didn't have time to go to somebody's office and sit there and the travel time and all. I didn't have that. They were great. You know, I love therapists. Being a therapist myself, I know that when you find a good one, they're wonderful. And I appreciate the work that they do because I obviously know what goes into it. But I didn't find working with them to be very helpful, mostly because I would spend so much of my time explaining what the medical terminology was that I was referring to that had just become part of our normal vocabulary. We didn't even remember a time when we didn't know what TPN was or PDA was or pulmonology or CLD, BPD. Like those things, it's like saying cat and dog. Everybody knows what that is. We'd forgotten that not everybody knows. And so having to explain it over and over and over, having to explain what happens in the NICU, having to explain that the NICU is loud, but why is it loud? It just became too much and it took away from the healing because I ended up becoming the teacher and I didn't want that. I didn't want to take care of one more person when I was seeking help to be taken care of and to help me take care of myself. And that's why I added a whole postpartum experience program to the work that I do. It's virtual, so it fits in with your hectic post-NICU, post-baby life, but it's conducted by me, a professional, and someone who's been through it, so you don't have to waste your time explaining to me what you've been through. I thought it was so important to do it. after that personal experience. So when the sessions didn't work out so great, I focused on doing what I now teach my clients to do, which is to stop and remind yourself and accept that it's not over because it's over. We like to believe that bringing our baby home is the cure to everything, that there's some door that finally closes, and that this new, fresh start to life will happen. But it doesn't work that way. There's a cumulative effect of the trauma and the stress and the anxiety that you've been through that you carry through that door into the next phase of life. And so you have to work through your high-risk pregnancy experience, the trauma that you've been through, and those worries so that you can truly heal and really enjoy this life that you've waited so long for. Now, I know what you're thinking. Who wants to relive that horrible experience when it's finally over? And even if somebody did, how do you find the time to do it? I get it. Oh my gosh, I get it. It feels awful to open up that wound again. And now that your baby's home, you don't want to spend that time in the past. You don't want to spend that time looking backwards. You just want to spend that time in the here and now and say, let's move forward. But here's what I also know. Emotional wounds, like the trauma you've been through, they don't go away with time. Time doesn't heal all wounds. It helps, but it's not enough. And what happens is the farther you push those emotions, those memories, those experiences away, the farther down you push them, they get stored in your body. And they become the source of sickness and chronic illnesses and autoimmune diseases. That's where you get chronic pain from. It's not all just from a physical source. That's why it's important that you know that it's not over because it's over. You have to work through your high-risk pregnancy experience and the trauma that you've been through so you can truly heal and live a happy, healthy life that you have fought so hard for. And it is absolutely possible. I am living proof of that. So if you're ready to start on this process, here's what I recommend, and this is where I recommend you start. Grab yourself a notebook. Now I'm going to do a little personal plug here and say my favorite notebook is the May Book by May Designs. They did not pay me to say this. I just am completely obsessed with their product. It is such a fabulous notebook. It's super reasonably priced. They ship really fast and it's so cute. Oh my God. So if you're a stationery addict like I am, totally check them out. But anyway, a regular Target Mead notebook is completely fine too. But just grab a notebook. And I tell my clients this too, to get a notebook instead of typing it out on the computer. There are a lot of reasons why, but mainly it's because when you write something down by hand, it's a much slower process and it forces you to slow down your thoughts. And you know, when you're stressed and anxious and worried, your thoughts are spinning out of control. And so it's really important that you slow them down, and writing your thoughts is a really great way to do that. If you really can't write, or if you hate it, or if you really don't have time, or you really, really, really don't want to, it's fine to type this out. There's nothing wrong with it. But if you can, I prefer and I recommend handwriting. Anyway, so grab yourself a notebook of whatever kind, grab yourself a pen, and give yourself a time limit, because this is an emotional exercise that you're going to do. So I usually say start with 10 minutes and work your way up from there. Put a timer on your phone, literally, so you make sure that you stop. And sit down and start writing. start writing your story. And you start at the very beginning. So now clients at this point ask me, well, what is the beginning? Because a lot of times clients of mine have been through so much that, you know, do you start 10 years ago when we first started trying? Do you start 6 months ago in the middle of my pregnancy when it all started falling apart? Like, where do I start? And I get this question a lot too when I get interviewed for podcasts and radio shows and things. And I always have to ask them too, like, well, my story's kind of long. Where exactly do you want me to start? So the answer to that, because this is your exercise, is to start wherever you want. Your beginning is your beginning. So wherever it feels natural to you, based on whatever is most prominently in your mind, start there. You can always go back and add more at the beginning before the story later. But pick a point and start there and write. Write about what happened, but even more so, write about how you felt about what happened. What were the details of that moment? What was happening? What did people say? What did you see? What did you hear? How did you feel? Write about all of that. Once you're done with the whole story, and for some people it takes a day, for some people it takes a few weeks. There's no time limit. But once you're done with it, put the notebook away and don't look at it for 2 to 3 days minimum. If you need a longer break than that, great. No problem. After the break is over, after a few days, go back and read the story. Now, what's going to happen is you're likely going to experience a lot of tears, but you'll notice the tears are not the same kinds of tears that you were experiencing before you did this, because these are going to be tears of compassion. By putting out your story somewhere, taking a break and going back, it allows you the space to feel compassion for yourself, to really take a step back and then come back and see how much you've been through. And that is what you need to start the healing process. You go through it. You've already been through it. It shouldn't be a surprise. And yet, when you're right in the middle of it, you really can't see the big picture. And that's what this is helping you do. Now, if you find yourself wishing for more guidance or support as you're going through this exercise, I offer this exact type of support specifically for women after a high-risk pregnancy, after a NICU stay, or after a traumatic delivery. So please reach out to me and I'm happy to tell you more about it. And I do have to mention here too that if when you're doing this, you find yourself having thoughts of harming yourself or your baby, please call 911 or go to the nearest emergency room. It's not over because it's over. But when you work through your high-risk pregnancy experience and the trauma of it all after your baby comes home, you can and you will heal. You deserve to fully enjoy the life you fought so hard for. And you really can do it. Before I leave you, I wanted to share this perfect quote by Tori Amos. Should you be feeling apprehensive about taking this step and trying this tip and exercise to start your healing process? She says, healing takes courage, and we all have courage, even if we have to dig a little to find it. Thank you so much for joining me here today. If you want to know more, or if you want to schedule an appointment, you can visit my website at parijatdeshpande.com. That's parijatdeshpande.com. Also, I would love to stay in touch. So follow me on Twitter or on Instagram. My handles for both are Parijat Desh. That's Parijatdesh. You've gone through so much and taken such good care of your baby. it's time to take care of you too, so you can finally breathe and deeply enjoy the life you fought so hard for. Take it one day, one step at a time. You can do this.